You're listening to the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folks who make it. I'm your host, Cassie Soliday. Today's guest is storyboard artist Michelle Rincon. This is actually part two of our conversation, so if you haven't listened to part one, pause and go take a listen. Still here? Great. Here's part two.
What do you feel is the like best thing about the work that you do?
I feel like I have to think about it. I just love everything. Can I say everything?
Yeah, sure.
I think working with other people on story, at least, you know, because this was my first storyboarding job, being able to kind of like, you know, look at these stories and decide what direction we're going to go in and how we're going to give the information out to kids. Because I really love that I was able to, every episode, we gave so much information to children about different parts of the world, different cultures, you know, stuff like that. And I thought it was super cool to do that. So I think my favorite part is being able to relay that information in an entertaining, funny way while they're also learning. I just love that about preschool so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Is representation important to you in the work that you will continue to take?
Oh my God, so much. Yes. I was so fortunate to be working on a show that was about representation. And you know, there was just like a lot of diversity, like in the characters and, you know, like the voice actors themselves, there was diversity. And I just, you know, really strive for that and like to make sure that every episode like was rich with, you know, with all of that representation. And I just hope to continue working in shows like that in the future.
I hope it happens. But yeah. Like when you're storyboarding, like have you like been able to create ways to advocate for diversity on screen? Like do you like always choose the POC characters for the background and everything? Because that's what I would do as a coordinator when I got to do that for the directors to approve. And I feel good about it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, definitely. Like, I thought having those kind of like, even if it's like a minute detail, you know, to somebody in the background, you're right. Having, you know, women, because all the characters like in this show, they're all animals. So, you know, sometimes you can't really tell what color this, you know, color skin, you know, the voice actor is, but I thought it was really cool. That I had the opportunity to insert like, you know, women or maybe why does it have to be, like if there's like a joke where maybe somebody like maybe Andy, like the frog character, like throws something off screen and it lands on a random passerby, like a random like person. Why can't it be a girl? You know, why does it always have to be like a man that does the Wilhelm scream, right? Is that how you say
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why must it be a man's voice? Why can't it be a woman's, right? Like why it, you know, I thought that was really cool about this interview that I did for Latinx Animation. There was somebody that we interviewed like a while back who works in editing, who she said that she makes an effort in even as an editor, like recording scratch for voices that could otherwise be male, but she makes sure that they're female because, you know, of what I just said right now, like how it could be a male a scream, but why does it have to be a male scream? It could be a woman's scream, or maybe there's no voice acting at all. Maybe there's like a driver that just kind of passes by in the background. Why does it have to be a male? It could be a female, you know? So yeah, definitely. Like I'm super for that in a kind of representation.
Yeah. And like you saying this, like reminded me of a article I read, I think in it was like Vanity or the Hollywood Reporter about the art director on BoJack Horseman and how she would put, like, if there was a gag, she would change the men in the board to women, like, animal characters. Nice. Because, like she didn't understand what it was about people's psyche that just automatically made the funny characters male. So I thought that was really cool. She's like, women can be really freaking weird too. So
yeah, they can be. Yeah. I think Kathy Jo, like, is, she always made it so that, I mean, me too, but I felt like she especially pushed our female characters, because we always had local characters in every part of the world that we visit that show the kids around and stuff. And me and her always talked about, how can we make this female character really interesting, but fun, and, you know, not like a, you know, a stereotypical stick in the mud, you know, that a female character would otherwise be represented as, you know, like, she could be interesting too.
Yeah, like something more than just sweet.
Yeah, more than sweet and, like, motherly, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a few minutes ago you had said how, like, you know, there's a lot of animals in your show, so, like, you never know the diversity of the voice actors. And, like, in the various roles in animation, you can't always make those big decisions depending on your role. So it's like, what position am I in, and how can I influence in the way that is appropriate for my job description? So I feel like everything you've mentioned is like, I'm so respectful, and something that we could all do, you know.
Yeah, I think it's something everyone should try, you know.
Yeah. So we'll talk some more about representation in a little bit, and Latinx in animation, but I'm wondering, like, do you have like, what other goals do you have? Like, are you, is storyboarding where you want to be for now? Or I'm just kind of wondering if you have a pie in the sky dream that you're kind of going after.
I feel like for a long time, I didn't really have anything beyond being a storyboard artist. And because I'm so fresh in this world, in my mind, at least, you know, because I've been here working, you know, in it for a little while now, but I'm still kind of green, I feel. And I didn't really think about it for a while, but seeing how little, you know, how few women, POC women there are in animation, it makes me really want to strive to be like a director or someone in a higher position that can kind of be more influential. I wouldn't say I'm opposed to being a showrunner at any point in my life, but it's definitely not my top choice, which I know a lot of people say that. But I'm more like the kind of person who prefers to, like, help people, you know, see their dreams come true, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a director would probably be really cool, but, I think, if I could do something that can, maybe help other people, like specifically kids and their parents, you know, in, people of color, those kind of backgrounds, if I could get them to understand that, you know, they can get to where I am today, that they can make cartoons, you know, and it's a feasible dream, it's a good job to have. I feel like having that kind of, like, outreach, or doing that kind of outreach would be really, really awesome. That's something that I've always wanted to do, and I just don't know exactly how I would do it, but I think I'm kind of taking the steps to get there right now.
Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer in that, like, even if there are things in your life that feel kind of disparate, but you really love them and are passionate about them, they'll merge eventually, you know?
Yeah.
And you're so right about directing being a position of giving opportunity, you know, because you're kind of a talent scout in a way, because you're always on the lookout for, like, new storyboard revisionist talent to work on your team as you go from show to show. And I feel like there's more opportunity as a director rather than a showrunner, you know? And you're very conscientious of your choices. And I think that's such a great trait for a director too. So,
yeah, you're, like, closer to, I guess, the team in a sense, because you're around them way more than a showrunner maybe.
Yeah. So you're basically also, like, kind of, what did you say? You're, like, out there spreading the animation gospel already with Latinx and animation. Can you tell us about the group?
Yeah. So Latinx and animation, It's a nonprofit organization that started a couple years ago, and it exists to like promote and empower diversity in animation and VFX and video game industries, and it falls under the Latino Film Institute umbrella, and pretty much like exists to like have panels and workshops and provide resources and things like that to increase diversity and awareness, but also for, not just for Latinos, which I feel like a lot of people think that, you know, this organization is only for Latinos, but it's not. It's for everybody, because if it wasn't, you know, then, you know, how can we have diversity if not everybody's welcome in it, you know? So, we do our best to, work together with like work with studios like of all kinds to provide these resources for them. And I've joined them a couple years ago, and it's just been like a wild, amazing ride, and it's just been really extreme. I'm just like extremely like humbled to be a part of it, and the fact that Magdiela and Brian entrust me with as much as they do, and the rest of the team, while also helping uplift other, POC voices and like Latinx voices and things like that. It's just like it's a huge honor.
Mm. I'm one of those dum-dums that felt like it wasn't for me, and you set me straight. So, but the funny thing is, not too long after that, a man emailed me saying how much he liked this podcast, even though it wasn't for him. And I was like, because you're right, it's about lifting up the voices in the community that you're highlighting and celebrating. And I want to call out your newsletters, because they're so informative and full of opportunities and opportunities for jobs and to volunteer with the organization. And if you have money, you can donate to the cause on their website. And you guys have been doing a lot of Zoom presentations or, talks over the summer since we've been in quarantine and everything. And I remember watching one with some writers, I believe, like Taylor Orsi and Cindy Spackman and stuff. And it was so good. Like, these talks are really great. And it's really cool that you guys are so active, and you actually keep the talks up on YouTube afterwards. I can't say how nice that is.
we try. Yeah. There have been a couple that we had to take down because, we were asked to, but we do our best to keep them up. And we're actually starting out this like new series of, demo videos that like me and this like small committee of people are working on to because it's super nice to like be able to have like these videos up on YouTube whenever you need them, like you said. It's accessibility is really important to us.
I love that. I've always wanted to do a YouTube channel where just a bunch of women and folks would like just put like, this is like a speed draw of this thing, just so like there's a place to come for inspiration and stuff, like more like. But I hope you guys do it. You guys have the like person power, so I hope that happens. So to make everyone comfortable in the workplace, how do you believe we can be better allies?
I think it's important to listen to each other's voices, but especially people of color's voices, and uplift their voices when they have something to say. But I think it would be really helpful or really awesome if there were just more diverse cartoons and therefore more diverse crews. More than anything, I feel like no matter what kind of show it is, if your crew is as diverse as possible, I think that is going to make for like a really good atmosphere that is like really welcoming of diversity and things like that. I've heard stories about, maybe some like, production teams are really, diverse, but maybe the writing team isn't, and so I think it's really important, but it's not just, POC that I'm talking about. I'm talking about, the LGBTQA+ community,
I know that there's some, you know, shows that are really doing really great about that. I'm not sure about like specifically like the cruise, but I know that there's some shows like, you know, Steven Universe and like We Bare Bears who are doing, and like She-Ra and the Princess of Power that are doing really great in terms of like at least, you know, showing diversity towards kids and stuff. So I think like it really just starts with the crew and like the higher ups kind of allowing for that kind of diversity. And
Yeah, completely agree. Do you have a work-life balance?
I feel like right now I, you know, don't really have one that's as healthy as it can be, but I'm working on it. It's kind of hard because of COVID and working from home to kind of, because I never really did freelance before. So it was kind of hard to distinguish, you know, that kind of, I know for some people who have like had that experience before, it's like easier maybe for them to like set those boundaries, but for me, it was completely new. So, what I try to do is, I've learned that, you know, if I, as long as I get the work done and I get it done right and I go to my meetings and I do all that well, then if I need to take a little bit of time between, you know, maybe 20 minutes or 15 minute break or whatever, you know, because I know that, I don't know what the method is called, but I know some people say, you know, work for like 20 minutes and then walk away for 20 minutes and come back and work for 30 minutes and walk away for 30 minutes. I don't know what that's called, but I know some people have like these techniques and I've been kind of trying that. And it's been really helpful for me to kind of, at least while I'm working, to, you know, not stress myself out so that by the time I'm done, I can feel comfortable enough to, you know, step away from my, my computer and my desk and, you know, not see it as like a negative space, because I feel like I feel like a lot of people are kind of having trouble with that right now. Kind of like,
for sure.
You know, because what if your desk, my desk is off. Fortunately, it's like in an office space, kind of like it's in our office, like are this like a separate room. But I know some people, like I used to have it in like a living room, or maybe it's like in a kitchen or something. So like, if you walk by it all the time, you see it and you're like, you know, with like a donut in your hand and you're like, well, there's my workspace, you know, what are you going to do about it? You know, you're going to stress out. So I feel like what I do is I just step away from my desk and I try not to sit at it at all for most of the day and for most of the weekend, unless I really need to, because I kind of associate it a lot with work. And that's the way I work, at least, is I just kind of try to separate myself as much as possible from it. And, you know, try to make time for going outside on walks. And usually that's during like those 20 minute breaks that I take, or 15 minute breaks if I need them.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I feel like it's so tough, like, because I feel like everyone has their ideal way to like take care of themselves and like just care for themselves overall. But it's so hard to like commit to it and stay consistent.
It is. Like, please teach me. I still need to learn.
Same. I can't help you. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it's a struggle, but I try to take everyone's advice and do a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm. So how do you practice storyboarding? Like, since you've started working, do you still like, you know, do those master copies of sequences that you like or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. Well, when I practice storyboarding, outside of like work, I definitely look at like, I do like film studies and things like that. So I'll do film studies and, you know, or actually TV show like studies. So like I'll watch a show and like I'll pause it and, or, you know, just quickly thumbnail like what the shot looks like to me. And, I'll also practice like, I think it helps me a lot to like practice gestures and things like that, like doing life drawing and I don't know if that answers your questions.
Oh, yeah, but, totally.
Yeah, I feel like there's just so many resources online that you can take advantage of, including just like, you know, there's some life drawing videos on YouTube that are just up for free whenever, and you can just watch them whenever you want, and just kind of watching those and doing them like on your own, just doing like gesture drawings of them, or even just, you know, doing what I said and like doing like the film studies and like, for me, at least like when it comes to, writing, I'm trying to learn, you know, more about like acts in a story, you know, in terms of, like in a cartoon or a TV show so that I can see if I can identify the story beats and, you know, how, fluid the dialogue goes from one line to another, to another, to another, without straying from, you know, the story. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, I mean, that's more of like a mental thing that I do, but I really should write it down or something. But yeah, I just try to do that on my own at least.
Yeah, I feel like with the writing exercise, I do the same thing. And unless I'm writing a spec on it, like I don't write it down. I just take notice of it. As well as like things I like about the tone or the pacing and stuff like that, so that I can identify what I want to write. Like just like, I want to have quippy dialogue. And then like, you know, I'll just know that. Keep it brief, keep it short, keep it moving forward. Those are all great ideas of how to like keep improving. And is that YouTube channel, one of them, is it called Croaky Cafe or something like that?
I don't remember the name of it actually, but I know that I saw some people, who was it? Natalie Nurgat and Alan, I don't remember his last name, when they were doing these like gesture drawing sessions weekly, I think. I don't know if they're still doing it. And they would just link to the, or they would just share the link, the YouTube link. And maybe it was that one. There's a ton of them, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved when they were doing that. I thought that was a really good weekly like check-in, if nothing else.
Oh yeah, totally. And oh, and then I forgot to mention like art of books are really helpful for I mean, looking at the art and stuff and all that, but some of them have like really cool storyboard, what is it called? Storyboard like sequences that you can like refer to. Mm-hmm. And I think another way, I'm trying to do that right now that I'm like on a work hiatus, but taking like an excerpt from a story or making up my own and just, you know, just really short bit and making, like a storyboard sequence to put up like on my portfolio or doing it for fun.
Yeah, that's great. What is the best storyboarding advice that you've gotten so far?
I think I've gotten so much of it and just thinking about it. Oh my gosh. But I know that one piece that I'm still working on right now too is do not neglect your perspective. I feel like it's such, you know, common advice, but at the same time, and it just feels like, okay, yeah, everybody should know that. Cool. But no, I feel like a lot of artists, even a lot of storyboard artists to this day, even ones that have a lot of years on their belt, like they neglect how the importance of good perspective or just even knowing how to lay grids and, you know, on, you know, the ground plane, the sky plane, things like that. And kind of, you know, studying that in films and things like that is so helpful. And I, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand what I was saying earlier about how I, you know, practice storyboarding, because I think one of the best things I got out of, you know, doing my mentorship a while back is that whole week that I was practicing film studies and practicing where the horizon line is and how, you know, where everything is in relation to perspective. Really, really forced me to think about, you know, the placement of everything. And the reason why I like stress this, why I emphasize it, is because it will make the life of the designers down the line, like the background designers, so much easier. It just makes production so much easier. Maybe I'm thinking from a production, you know, coordinator, assistant point of view, but if you can work as hard as you can on your storyboard to make it as easy as possible for everyone down the line, that would be great. Because, you know, coming from a production role, I understood how important that was. And, you know, as with every other role in animation, you know, you're working in a team. You know, your crewmates are your teammates, even if you don't work directly with them as like, you know, maybe they're not your director, maybe you're not talking to them, you know, every single day. But you know, it's going to make the show run much better. And it's something I've been kind of like trying to study and work on, you know, regularly. And then another piece of advice that I got recently, actually, it was more of like a reminder from Joe, because he's very very character driven, story driven person, like in his stories. And, you know, he stressed the importance of character motivation when you're telling a story, even if whether it's your story or it's a story that you're writing, you know, you're drawing from somebody's script. It's very important for you to not just draw the scene as you think would be great to, but really think about why they're looking in the direction they're looking, why they're about to say what they're about to say, what are they feeling in the moment, you know, how is what they're saying going to affect the person that they're talking to. It's just, you know, thinking about all these things is just really important. And I feel like it made me, while I'm still, you know, improving as a writer, I feel like it made me a better writer when it came to writing scripts, because, you know, before I used to just kind of think like, okay, they're going to say this and then they're going to say that and they're going to say that. Nope, that's not how it works. You have to really think about the whys.
Yeah, I love that. That's so true. I love characters with agency.
Yeah, the characters are a real person. They're just also fake, but they're real.
Exactly. So you've celebrated a lot of folks that have helped you out throughout your journey, but like this section of the podcast is all about like just ranting about everyone you're excited about. Like, so like what inspires you? Like, who should we be checking out? What shows should we be watching or stories we should be reading, etc.?
Oh my goodness.
I know it's a lot. Anything you want to say?
Oh, it's fine. There's just so many people. I feel like my friend Cindy Quach, I don't know if I said her name wrong, and I feel bad if I do.
Oh my gosh.
But Cindy Quach is just like always been like really real motivation for me, because she's just so hardworking and knows, like, her drawings are so tight, and I don't know. I just like really look up to her. Gloria Felix is an up and coming Latina artist who has done all kinds of art, like background art and vis dev art, and she's just wonderful. Jasmine Puente, who I went to school with, her Instagram is Sundry Jazz, and she helped me a lot when I was starting out, kind of motivating me, pushing me. I know she's still trying to find her way in, and I know she will really soon. I just get motivated by like my friends. I know a lot of people talk about like, you know, heroes and things like that. People who are like leagues ahead of them, maybe, who are showrunners. But I really like looking, and I really encourage everybody to look at, you know, people on your level and people with you, and you know, maybe people who are barely starting to get somewhere, maybe they're in school still, but you know, don't be jealous by them. I feel like I always, you know, would rather draw inspiration and motivation from them, and so I really look up to a lot of people who are beside me, and one of those people is Magdiela Duhamel, who is, you know, she's the founder of Latinx Animation, and Brian Dimas, who's the co-founder of Latinx and Animation. And I'm just, you know, constantly motivated by the fact that they're like, everything that they do, even if they're not necessarily creatives in the way that a lot of artists are, they're creative in the way that they want to see diversity in animation, and really work and just inspire me to do the same. So I, you know, gosh, I just love it. I just love all these people, and I love some of the shows that are coming out right now that are pushing for diversity. And I know recently, I think on Friday, Santiago of the Seas came out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Friday, and yeah, it was super cute. I saw that episode, and you know, I'm not. I thought it was so cool how they had like, you know, music inspired by like, I think reggae, and I don't remember what kind of music it was, but it was like Latin inspired music. And I thought that was super awesome. And I just want to see more of that.
Yeah, me too. I love the energy, kind of talking about the people like on your level or like coming up behind you or like right ahead, like focusing more, less about people who have been in the industry for like 20 something years or whatever. Like there's such an energy to folks who are like really hustling, working on their craft actively. Cause after a few years in the industry, some people like they can take a little bit more time, like taking workshops. They don't like take three in a row or something like that, you know? And people can sometimes get complacent as well, but there's really an energy to the community that's actively trying to make it work and to break in and everything.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah,
it's like, pushing each other.
And I totally agree with what you said about Cindy. She definitely knows how to put herself out there, just like you. I met both of you, I think, at the Animation Network mixer.
Yeah,
and have consistently run into both of you.
I know you couldn't escape us.
You couldn't escape me.
I see. Yeah, all the turntables.
Yeah, and I feel like you inspire me because like you were everywhere, and you were into everything animation, and I was just like, wow, I really need to up my game.
I didn't really talk about this earlier, but I feel like it really was important to me to, make up for time lost in a way, because I felt like, okay, you know, I'm graduating, which I graduated in 2016, and I felt like, okay, I'm not where I probably should be right now, where a lot of people my age would be by then. And then I thought, okay, well, I can't really let that hold me back, because I recognize, especially joining Latinx in Animation and talking to other people who are, you know, POC, who didn't have the same opportunities that some people, you know, were fortunate to have. Like, it was really helpful to surround myself with people like that too, because, you know, like, I'm super grateful to have had my mom and some of my family who were really supportive of me growing up, but because of the situation that I was in, you know, I grew poor and I just didn't have because of that, we didn't have the resources that other people may have. And, you know, my mom didn't have the knowledge that she has now, where she could put my little brother in like art classes and stuff. She would have liked to do that before, but she couldn't. And so like, I feel like when I was graduating school and I was thinking to myself, okay, well, I could just think about that and let that get me down, or I could really just take that as a driving force, is like, you know, to inspire myself, I'm not where I could be today, but if I work really hard and I persevere and I don't give up and I surround myself with these people who are either the same as me or, you know, maybe better, but in around the same level as me, then, you know, we can all uplift and push each other because we have the same or similar struggles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, You have a healthy way of looking at it already, but I always think about the things that originally held us back or gave us some obstacles along the way are what we can now like turn around and give back to the community and help them through their own struggles. I'm a big believer in that, paying it forward and stuff.
Yeah, me too. I think anytime I get the opportunity to like help anybody, it's just, wow, like I was there. I totally understand. Here, what can I do for you?
Yeah. So we're at the end of the interview. You've made it.
Yay.
Yeah. So final advice. What advice would you give to someone who wants to do the creative work that you do?
I think if you're really serious about what you want to do, you most likely have something in your style or the way you tell your stories that is unique to you. And I think you should let it shine. Because, you know, if you keep doing I always feel like I like telling people, you know, if there's something that you like to do a certain way, if you keep doing it, you know, unapologetically, then people will notice. And it might take some time, but somebody will notice, and then more people will notice. And then eventually, you know, you will have, you know, an audience. And whether that audience is, you know, because you're trying to set up an Etsy shop to sell things or sell things at conventions and literally have an audience of people who come and buy those things. Or maybe the audience is full of people who are potential recruiters or hiring managers or, you know, potential peers who could be working with you in the industry, people will notice. And I say this in the way that, like, you know, in my case, you know, I really like when I can incorporating my culture into my work. I really like dancing folklorico, and I'm kind of unapologetic about that, maybe a little, I don't know, but I just really love it, and I want people to know about it, and I want to teach them about it, and, you know, I draw it in my work, and I think some people kind of notice that, and some people kind of know me for doing that, and if anybody needs anything related to, you know, folklorico, then they can come to me, and that's great. So I just feel like, you know, it's cheesy as it may sound, like being yourself, you know, unapologetically, but being kind and friendly and, you know, learning how to take advice and critique and doing it well, I think will go a really long way because, you know, most people, I want to say like 99% people in this industry are very friendly people who just want to work with other friendly people. And also, I just feel like, and this is kind of talking to me from past me, because I felt like I prioritized a lot of getting into animation for a really long time. And I set a lot of other things aside, like just my life, like, you know, hobbies and family and things like that. And I don't recommend doing that too much. Like some people say, you know, don't sleep, you know, work on the weekends, work overtime, and, you know, don't, like, sleeping is a waste of time. Like, don't do that to yourself either. Please rest, sleep. Like, it's so important because, you know, yeah, you could get up or not sleep and, like, do this test and get like 75% and pass and be okay. But if you had some sleep, you probably would have gotten like 100% on that test, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just, you know, kind of just talking to past self, but also like anybody, like, please don't rush it, you know, like you'll get there. It took me 2.5 years and I wouldn't, you know, if I wanted to take a little bit longer, I probably should have, but take your time. You'll get there.
Yeah. I feel like we're always rushing to get to our goals, and in a way, so this is very morbid, but like, I always think like you're rushing to get to your deathbed. Oh my gosh. It's so morbid. I'm sorry, but I think about that a lot.
I meant that like that's true though.
Yeah, because like I was like, gosh, it's taken forever, and then I finally got it, and I just felt like, wow, I don't remember almost anything from the last so many years. Wow, like what if I had died? I wouldn't have lived my life. Anyways,
no, it's true. I mean, it's the journey, right? Like it's getting there, and because everybody's always like obsessed with getting to a certain point in their life by a certain age. And then when you do, what happens after that, you know, like, mm-hmm. don't stress out about it so much.
Yeah. You know, in Tangled where Rapunzel gets her dream and then she's mm-hmm. like, what's my next dream? I like, that was the first time I ever thought, cause I wasn't to my dream yet. And that was the first time I ever thought like, oh, there's an after you get to your dream.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it like blew my mind.
Wow, that's a really good, I have to rewatch that. That's awesome. Yeah.
But where can we find you online?
So you can find me at on Twitter and Instagram at Elote Waifu, which is ELOTEWAIFU. Or you can check me out on my website, michellerinconart.com, or on LinkedIn, Michelle Rincon.
Very fancy. thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I loved it.
The Ink and Paint Folk podcast is produced in partnership with Women in Animation, an organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation and reaching 50-50 by year 2025. Learn more at womeninanimation.org. Please also check out other great organizations and groups promoting diversity in the industry. Black and Animated, Rise Up Animation, Latinx in Animation, Asian Queens in Animation, and Diverse Tunes. This episode was produced by me, with the magic of the internet from beautiful Burbank, California. Music by Grace Tsai and TV's Kyle, edited by Mae Murphy. All opinions expressed here are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast. Stay colorful.